Medea, for people who may not know what drones are, could you spell it out and really define what do we mean when we say drones and drone warfare?
It's pretty simple. A drone is something that's flying in the air and doesn't have a pilot inside. But that could be something that's really tiny, like the size of an insect. And of course, you're not going to fit a little pilot inside that. It can be a little bit bigger, like the size of a hummingbird. It could be the size of something you put in a soldier's backpack and they can launch it just by themselves. It could be the size of a small airplane, a big commercial airplane. So they come in all shapes and sizes. But what they have in common is they fly and they do something like record images. Most of them are used for surveillance purposes. And then there's the type of drone that's used for killing, lethal drones.
So how prevalent is their use? Has this been something that's new? Is this just sort of in a few applications?
The use of drones goes back decades when they were first being developed for surveillance purposes. But it was really September 11th that you could say was the coming of age of the drones. When September 11th happened, there were perhaps about 50 drones in the whole Pentagon arsenal. And today there are many thousands, perhaps over 7,000. And who knows how many the CIA has, because we're not privy to that information. But it was the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq that really put the drones on the map. They were part of the shock and awe. They were part of the precision bombing that took out so many ministries in both countries. They were part of the attacks on the Taliban that led to the death of a lot of innocent people, but the American people didn't know about that because we were told we're in this new era of precise, clean weapons that are laser-guided or smart bombs. And so the American people didn't have to worry about things like civilian casualties.
So I get the impression that you don't think these are so clean. What's your problem with drones?
They kill a lot less people than carpet bombing did in the world wars, and certainly the kind of bombing that was done in the days of Vietnam. But they are not the surgically precise weapons that they're touted as. And when they're in the hands of secret organizations like the CIA and the Joint Special Operations Command, also known as JSOC of the military, they actually expand the wars so that it was bad enough the U.S. has been involved in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But then really, unbeknownst to the American people, we have seen the wars going beyond that to spill over into Pakistan and then into Yemen, into Somalia. There have been some drone strikes in the Philippines. There's talk about using them in Nigeria. There's new drone bases that are now spreading around the world. And this is a very determined effort by our Pentagon and our government to have the latitude to continue waging war without some of the problems that have come with it in the past, like soldiers dying, American people complaining. And this is their way of saying, okay, it's war on the cheap, and it's war outside of the view of the public.
So, Medea, you've sketched out the reasons the U.S. finds it efficient to use drones, but can you tell us a little bit more about the total cost, not just the price?
The cost, there's so many ways to look at cost. If you look at it from the point of view as how much does a Reaper or Predator, which is the killing drones, how much do they cost? Well, they do seem pretty cheap. You know, you can get one of those for $10 million, $15 million, and that's nothing in the Pentagon budget. But there's a lot of things that go into the cost. One is they crash all the time. So a third of them, says the Air Force, have crashed, which means you have to keep replacing these. They have a lot of maintenance problems. It seems like for every hour in the air, they need an hour of maintenance. There's a lot of labor involved. It's almost counterintuitive because you'd think without the pilot in the cockpit, you'd be saving on labor. But to the contrary, you need more people because there's the ground crew where the physical drone is that's maintaining it, that's launching it. There's the ground crew that's operating the drone, which might be 8,000 or 10,000 miles away from where the drone physically is. And then there's the crew that's needed to look at the hours and hours and hours of video footage that the drone is collecting. So it's estimated that for one of these lethal drones, it maybe takes about 168 people to maintain that drone in its day's work.
And the human cost on the other side of the drones?
Well, then there's the issue about the human cost. Yes, you're saving the potential life of a pilot. They're not going to be shot down. They're not going to be captured by the enemy. There's certainly an advantage not having a pilot in the cockpit. But there's other costs. One is the cost of what is it doing to the pilots on the ground and the kind of PTSD that they're getting, because here they're doing this very surreal kind of activity of killing by day and supposed to be lovers and fathers and good members of the community by night. And most of our brains aren't wired like that. So you're finding a lot of mental problems that the pilots are going through. And then there's the cost in terms of the morality of this. And what is it saying to the rest of the world that the United States is so committed to these fights that we're willing to sacrifice the lives of innocent people on the receiving end, but we're not willing to sacrifice the lives of the military or the pilots on the operating end.
And I'm curious about hearing more about the people on the receiving end, the human cost where the bombs from the drones fall. Can you talk about that and kind of quantify that? Because I don't know if people know the scope of what's going on.
People don't know the scope of what's going on because they've not been told, because this is a secret program. And until really 2012, we didn't hear anything about it. There was a ridiculous kind of silence because the rest of the world knew what was happening, but the American people didn't. The only way we know these numbers is from what's been pieced together by organizations like the Bureau for Investigative Reporting in England that puts together some of the statistics. And they say that in Pakistan alone, there have been over 320 drone strikes, the majority, the overwhelming majority of them under the Obama administration, and that some 3,000 people have been killed, 175 of them children, and who knows about the rest of them? We are only able to name 170 people who've been killed, and many people in Pakistan would say that the vast majority of the rest of them who've been killed are either totally innocent people who had nothing to do with the fighting, or very low-level Taliban who were not out to get Americans, or Taliban sympathizers. And when we have discovered through a piece of writing in the New York Times that came out on May 29th of 2012, we have discovered that President Obama is so intimately involved in this killing that he sits around on Terror Tuesdays with notes that resemble baseball cards and look through this list and decide who's going to live and who's going to die. And that they have made a determination beforehand that every military age male in the strike area is going to be labeled a combatant, a militant. So automatically then we hear in our news reports, oh, 20 militants died on Saturday and 12 militants died on Monday. And we can't believe those reports at all, because their definition of a militant is basically any man who's old enough to have a little facial hair and lives in this case, northern Pakistan, or lives in the parts of Yemen where we're doing our drone strikes.
So can you sketch for us what that might mean if you're a 17 or 18-year-old pilot in a bunker in the Nevada desert seeing this on a screen? What does a militant look like if you're one of the people remotely piloting a drone.
A militant looks like a guy with a beard who wears a turban and carries a gun and goes around with other guys with beards who wear turbans and carry guns. And that is the definition of just about every man in northern Pakistan. And so if the community is having a meeting about internal issues that is called a jirga, and they have gathered a lot of these men with beards and turbans and guns to this 18, 19-year-old pilot who is in the desert in Nevada, that looks very suspicious. And there have been occasions when they have bombed these jirgas and killed many, many of the tribal leaders at one time. And you can imagine the kind of repercussions that happens after that, because these are not just individuals who have been killed. These are people who are part of a clan, part of a tribe, part of an extended family. And many times, like in the case of these gatherings called jirgas, they are the leaders, the elders, the most respected members of the community. So when, as has happened, the U.S. takes out 50 elders and tribal leaders at one time, it's going to take years, if not decades, to stop the hatred towards Americans that results from those strikes.
So it sounds like you're referring to the blowback and the results of people who are on the receiving end of drones. Some people might say, though, it's just necessary. There's a war on terror and negotiations don't work. And what we need is these kinds of targeted killings. I mean, people really feel fearful in the United States. What do you say to that? And what's been the history of negotiations versus killings versus other ways of ending conflict?
I wish that after the killing of Osama bin Laden, the Obama administration could have said, okay, victory, all done, go home now. We have killed most everybody who was involved in 9/11, and we should be able to say, done. We did it a terrible way. We killed all these Iraqis who had nothing to do with it. We've killed all these Afghans who had nothing to do with it. But indeed, the Obama administration could say, we have done our job of finding those people who were responsible for 9/11, whatever they want to say to get out of it, and say, and now we're going to focus on keeping ourselves safe at home, on defense, which is what the Department of Defense is supposed to be about. Instead, we're still out there mucking things up and creating more enemies faster than we can kill them. And it really seems that the ones who benefit from this are the military-industrial complex who keep manufacturing and selling weapons and keep this war going. But it certainly doesn't make us safer here at home. Every time we kill somebody, we're creating more enemies. And the people who are now joining the Taliban or Al-Qaeda were probably 10 or 11 years old when 9/11 happened. The only thing they know about the United States is that we are killing their people with drone strikes. They think we have a war against the Muslim world. And unfortunately, a lot of people in this country think that as well. And I think at this point, after 10 years, we've got to understand that there is no military solution, that we are punishing the wrong people right now, creating more enemies in the process. And their only way out of this is negotiations, withdrawal from occupying countries we shouldn't be in. And sure, we could be working with the local military and the police to make sure that they have the wherewithal to try to keep their own population safe. But the way we're going about it now certainly doesn't work. And let me give you one example, and that is in the case of Yemen. So the U.S. government says, we were focusing on Pakistan because that was where the Taliban were going after they fled from Afghanistan. And now that we're hitting them in Pakistan, they have moved on to Yemen. And this is called the whack-a-mole approach to foreign policy, that you hit somebody in one place and they pop up somewhere else. So in the case of Yemen, when the Obama administration began its drone strikes there was in 2009. In 2009, there were maybe, at most, 200 members of a group called Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and they didn't control any territory. If you look at it today, after the drone strikes, you have over 1,000 militants who are part of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and they control significant territory. We have taken also what was an internal conflict inside Yemen, and we are turning it into an international conflict. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, even people who joined it, were not interested in attacking the United States. But once the United States gets involved in this and starts killing people, it becomes an international conflict. And we can see people in the administration who are speaking out and saying, uh-oh, this isn't looking so good. We're being responsible now for turning this into an international conflict. Maybe we should reflect for a while. And then, of course, there's the others who say, no, just go in with the whack-a-mole approach and keep, in fact, extend the drone strikes.